U.S. President Joe Biden returns to the White House.
On social media, the president says he'll deliver a primetime address on what lies ahead and how he will finish the job for the American people.
Vice President Harris makes her first stump speech as a presidential candidate.
I am told as of this morning that we have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination.
And Mattel has introduced its first ever blind Barbie doll.
I didn't see myself represented as a young blind girl growing up in the world. All I wanted was a role model that looked like me. And finally, we have one.
Today's Wednesday, July 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strope.
And I'm Scott Walterman. Now testing negative for COVID-19, U.S. President Joe Biden returned to the White House on Tuesday and will speak to the nation on Wednesday. Details on that now from Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani.
President Biden says he will address the nation about his decision to end his re-election bid. It'll be a primetime address from the Oval Office by a president who had not been seen publicly in nearly a week. He'd been at his Delaware beach house recovering from COVID-19. The president says on social media he'll discuss what lies ahead and how he will finish the job for the American people. But on Capitol Hill,
if Joe Biden is not fit to run for president, he is not fit to run the country.
House Speaker Mike Johnson and many Republicans are urging the president to step down. The White House calls that ridiculous. And number four House Democrat Ted Lieu used a football analogy to explain why.
Like a quarterback takes a team that's like 4 years ago not doing well, and then now takes them to having a winning victory and says, you know, I'm going to retire next year. Doesn't mean that quarterback can't play this year.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Voters in the United States are facing a new presidential campaign with incumbent Joe Biden dropping out and Vice President Kamala Harris likely to be the Democratic Party's nominee to face Donald Trump in November. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how some voters are reacting to the change.
In Joe Biden's hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania, voter Eric Boylan says Democrats had little choice but to push Biden out.
I think he was a very good leader, but I do kind of also agree that his time has come and it's time to step aside and let somebody, you know, somebody rise up within those ranks.
Voter Christine Stoll says if Biden is unfit to be a candidate, he should step down as president.
He should have dropped out a long time ago. He should leave the White House. He is not mentally stable enough to run this country.
Making Vice President Kamala Harris the nominee improves the party's chances against Republican candidate Donald Trump, says voter Daniel Brennan.
Harris polls well against Trump, so I think she has a real shot at winning. And I think he's doing the right thing right now, despite some people being so nervous and saying it's disastrous.
On a visit to Washington, Pennsylvania voter Bill Mills says Harris shares responsibility for Biden's economic failures.
We're noticing an increase in the price of groceries and fuel and the price of living, and our lives are worse now. And Vice President Harris is riding on those coattails. So it's going to be very hard to shake that opinion when we have all witnessed an economic downturn in all of our lives.
In Michigan, voter Jason Potts says the switch gives the Democratic Party a chance to connect with younger voters.
I always thought we're just Biden time until someone a little more tenacious comes along. And we'll see if that's Kamala. She's got more fire, definitely. And
as Vice President Harris worked on controlling illegal immigration, Florida voter Christopher Rangel says her failure at the border makes her unqualified to be president.
Kamala's garbage. She's worse than Joe. Are they on the same page? They're about the same. But I don't think anybody's going to vote for Kamala. No one wants to back her. She had one job. That was handling the border.
In Washington, voter Alicia Jefferson hopes people do not see the vice president only as a woman of color, but look to her accomplishments.
And I hope they can look past anything else and look at that. But the world we live in, that some people will and some won't. And I hope it's not enough people that stand away or use that as an obstacle for her to get in office.
New Yorker Andrew Varshavsky says it will be tough for anyone to beat Trump.
Even if Biden were to stay in the race, or whoever we have right now as a Democrat, that it's right now it's Trump's race to lose. So as I'm a Democrat, I think it's going to be hard for us to win this race, no matter what happens now.
Harris appears to have enough commitments from party delegates to be the nominee, but it will take next month's Democratic National Convention in Chicago to make her the party's official candidate to challenge Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Vice President Kamala Harris assailed Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump on Tuesday at her first campaign rally since replacing Biden as the Democratic presidential candidate.
Before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
A Reuters Ipsos opinion poll shows Harris taking a marginal lead over Republican Trump. So let's dig into this a bit. Joining us now is Cliff Young, Ipsos president of polling and societal trends.
So it seems like the Democrats have been completely re-energized by making this switch. Looking at the latest data, money, enthusiasm, volunteers. Right, is that what you guys are seeing?
Yes, we're seeing that across the board. We just received a poll out of the field a couple hours ago, and you can see it really in the numbers. Kamala has been helped both in terms of the horse race poll. She's ahead of Trump, as well as in terms of favorability scores, which have jumped six points. So across the board, a lot of energy, mobilization of the Democratic base.
Money is the lifeblood, right? It seems that that has also been re-energized, the giving.
Yes, if anything, it's a leading indicator of this energy. It kind of predates the polls, right? And that's a good way to gauge whether the base is healthy or not in respect to the principal or the candidate specifically. So yes, money is a very important indicator and very important, obviously, for campaigns in the modern era.
What are some of the other things that we should be looking at in terms of polling data that impacts positively or negatively either campaign at this point?
Yeah, right this second, we're in the eye of the storm, so we obviously have to be careful with the polls. But we typically look at favorability scores. Is there improvement there? Is there improvement in terms of name recognition? Become better known to the population, and obviously, the most important are the horse race numbers. Does that translate into a more sort of efficacious performance for her or for him? That is, for Trump or for Harris in terms of voting.
If you're the campaign, how do you capitalize on this surge?
Yeah, this is the moment where messages are the most sticky. This is when individuals, voters, are most predisposed to listen. In a relative sense, they're more optimistic towards the candidate, in this case, Kamala Harris. And this is where you really have to get push out and get forward your message. Who is she? What's her biography? What she's all about? And you have to do that before your adversary does. You have to define who she is before the Republicans do. And you have this moment in time, this sort of halo effect that makes such efforts most sticky.
I read a poll recently that estimates that there is 9% undecided in likely voters. Do you think the number is that big?
I think it's probably around 10%. I think that's about right. Obviously, it's much more about getting your base out to vote than it is to convincing someone to vote for you. Ultimately, those undecideds, probably about half to more than half, won't even show up on election day. But there is still a thin margin on the margins, individuals to convince. And obviously, the elections in the United States come down to the swing states. So any half percentage point is important because those elections are so close.
Especially in a state like, let's say, Pennsylvania, right, where it was really tight last time, Georgia, really tight, Arizona, really tight, like very slim margins. You need that 10, 15, 20,000 voters, right?
Yeah, it's essential. So the ability to mobilize your base, to energize your base is key. It's critical. But any undecided that you can convince to come over to your side is important as well and could be the deciding factor in a state where 10, 20, 30,000 votes are all that matter.
Hmm. Thank you so much for the time and the insight.
Well, thank you so much.
Cliff Young, President of Polling and Societal Trends at Ipsos.
Protesters are gathering in Washington in advance of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's address to a joint session of Congress on Wednesday.
We need to stop this war. I'm begging Bibi. Help. We need the 120 hostages out.
Palestinian factions, including rivals Hamas and Fatah, agreed to end their divisions and form an interim national unity government during negotiations in China that ended on Tuesday. China's foreign ministry says the Beijing declaration was signed at the closing ceremony of a reconciliation dialogue among 14 Palestinian factions held in China's capital from July 21st to the 23rd. The U.S. State Department is dismissing the agreement reached in Beijing. Here's State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller.
Hamas is a terrorist organization, something that we obviously made clear before October 7th. But when it comes to governance of Gaza at the end of the conflict, there can't be a role for a terrorist organization. Hamas has long been a terrorist organization. They have the blood of innocent civilians, both Israeli and Palestinian, on their hands. And so when you look at the post-conflict governance of Gaza, we do see, as we've made clear, we want to see the Palestinian Authority governing a unified Gaza and the West Bank. But no, we do not support a role for Hamas.
And more trouble for the people in Gaza. The World Health Organization said on Tuesday there was a high risk of the polio virus spreading across the Gaza Strip and beyond its borders due to the dire health and sanitation situation.
This virus is spread through fecal-oral way of transmission. In addition to that, as I said, the functionality of the health facilities, especially primary healthcare services that provide vaccination and other maternal and child health services to the population in Gaza, is critical, is basically not functioning.
Ayadil Saper-Bekov, team lead for the health emergencies at WHO in Gaza and the West Bank.
U.S. Senator Bob Menendez resigned on Tuesday in the aftermath of his conviction on corruption charges, including bribery and acting as an agent for Egypt's government. Bowing to pressure from fellow Democrats, he submitted a letter of resignation, which was read into the official record of the Senate.
Without objection, the letter will be printed in the record and spread upon the journal.
Democratic New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy will appoint a replacement for Menendez, who has represented New Jersey in the Senate since 2006 and served as chairman of the influential Foreign Relations Committee before giving up that post after being charged last year.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Russia's lower house of parliament has passed legislation expanding the reach of a law declaring foreign-funded organizations undesirable. It adds the criterion to an existing law that an organization can be declared undesirable if foreign government bodies founded or participate in it. 3 days before the start of the 2024 Olympics, France's interior minister says about 1,000 people suspected of possibly meddling for a foreign power have been blocked from attending the Olympics. About 1 million background checks have scrutinized Olympic volunteers, workers, and others involved in the Games, as well as those applying for passes to enter the most tightly controlled security zone in Paris.
U.S. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle resigned after the agency came under harsh scrutiny for its failure to stop a would-be assassin from wounding former President Donald Trump during a campaign rally in Pennsylvania. Here's Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen with more.
It comes after Cheadle faced bipartisan condemnation before the House of Representatives Oversight Committee on Monday, where she declined to answer questions from frustrated lawmakers about the security plan for the rally and how law enforcement responded to the suspicious behavior of the gunman.
I don't want to add to the director's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, but I will be joining the chairman in calling for the resignation of the director, just because I think that this relationship is irretrievable at this point.
President Joe Biden said in a statement that the independent review of July 13th would continue and that he would appoint a successor soon. The agency did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Representative James Comer, chair of the House Oversight Committee, said in a statement, "While Director Cheadle's resignation is a step toward accountability, we need a full review of how these security failures happened so that we can prevent them going forward." A would-be assassin wounded Trump during a campaign rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, July 13th, after firing shots from a nearby roof. The shooter was killed by police after he killed one person and injured two others in addition to Trump.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. New information on the assassination attempt. The head of the Pennsylvania State Police says two local police officers stationed in the complex of buildings where the gunman opened fire at Trump left their post to go search for the man before the shooting. Pennsylvania State Police Colonel Christopher Parris's testimony before a congressional hearing on Tuesday raises questions about why the post was left unattended as the gunman climbed on a roof nearby. The revelation comes amid growing questions about a multitude of security failures that allowed the 20-year-old gunman to get onto the roof and fire 8 shots.
Two landslides in southern Ethiopia have killed at least 229 people, an official said on Tuesday, and the death toll could rise further. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has more.
The search is ongoing, and that there were bodies yet to be recovered. Officials had reported on Monday that 50 people had died. That's after heavy rain overnight caused a first landslide and then a second buried people who had gathered to help. Women, children, and local police were reported to be among the dead.
That was Reuters correspondent David Doyle.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman, along with Alexis Strope. Sunday, July 21st, just this past weekend, was the hottest day ever, according to preliminary data from the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service, which has tracked global weather patterns since 1940.
According to our data set, the global mean temperature on Sunday was 17.09. Basically, we have just lived the warmest day in recent history, according to our data.
Carla Bontempo, director of the Copernicus Service, said that it was possible Monday, Tuesday, or even Wednesday of this week could eclipse Sunday's record as heat waves continue to sizzle across the world. Last year saw 4 days in a row break the record from July 3rd through July 6th as climate change, according to the Weather Service, driven by the burning of fossil fuels, drove extreme heat across the Northern Hemisphere. Rights groups accuse French authorities of social cleansing ahead of the Paris Olympics by uprooting migrants, sex workers, and others around the capital, undermining promises of making these games the most inclusive ever. The government says it's simply trying to address a long-standing problem. Lisa Bryant has more from the French capital.
An early morning evacuation of a migrant camp
on the edge of Paris. Its residents are uncertain about what's next. Abdoulaye Sow, a migrant from Guinea, says authorities told them to come here and they would find housing for them. With the Olympic Games, he says, we can't stay here. They're going to resettle us somewhere. These kinds of evictions are not new. Rights groups have criticized them before. But activists question the size and the timing of this latest campaign, coming right before the Paris Olympics.
I would describe all this, because it's not only this week, it has started long before. It's called, we call it the social cleansing of Paris. So it's basically because of the Olympics, the will to empty the streets of all misery and poverty.
Borsati's charity is part of an activist network called The Other Side of the Medal. It claims hundreds of people have been relocated in the months before the Games. Not just migrants, they say, but also Roma, sex workers, and others are under pressure. Some migrants have reportedly been sent to locations far from the capital, losing precarious jobs and access to social services. French authorities say migrants can choose where they want to go. Adeline Savi is chief of staff of the Île-de-France prefecture around Paris. She says authorities have been doing these operations every week for years. They offer shelter in the Île-de-France region to people living in difficult and unsanitary conditions. She says authorities also send people regularly to other French regions because emergency shelters in Paris are saturated. So they propose to people who have just arrived without any attachments to Paris to try their luck elsewhere. The evacuations come amid rising anti-immigration sentiments in France, boosting the popularity of the far-right National Rally Party. Paris's leftist city hall blames national authorities for not providing migrants with enough solutions. Paris deputy mayor Lamia El Arraj says it's been months since the city hall has asked the government to take control of the situation, which is under their exclusive competency. She says city authorities continue to offer migrants places for shelter and support, but the state needs to take its responsibilities. For now, these migrants will be offered a place to stay around Paris, but they could well be back on the streets when the games are over. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
Several loggerhead sea turtles were released in Puerto Banus Beach in Marbella, Spain on Tuesday, almost a year after the nest containing 69 eggs was discovered on a nearby beach.
Y ahora hemos liberado 10 tortugas con marcadores radio satélite.
We have released 10 turtles with GPS trackers, which they will carry for 6 months, emitting signals that will allow us to know where they are.
Seville aquarium biologist Juan Manuel Gavira hopes that they will travel hundreds of kilometers, but will remain in the Mediterranean.
And finally...
Oh my gosh, Barbie, have you got a little cane?
Lucy Edwards is touching the first ever blind Barbie doll.
I'm super excited because I didn't see myself represented as a young blind girl growing up in the world. All I wanted was a role model that looked like me, and finally we have one.
Toy maker Mattel collaborated with several organizations dedicated to aiding the blind community to create the doll. They include the Royal National Institute of Blind People and the American Foundation for the Blind. The groups provided input on everything from the doll's outfit, the eye gaze, and the company's website, which was made accessible for the blind.
The blind community knows a lot about the sighted community, but the sighted community doesn't know a lot about the blind and low vision community, right?
The doll includes a cane with a tactile marshmallow tip, sunglasses, textured and vibrant fabrics for sensory engagement, practical clothing fastenings, and articulated elbow joints for realistic cane use. The new addition follows a series of inclusive dolls, such as the hearing loss Barbie, Down syndrome Barbie, and Barbie in a wheelchair.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for being with us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, with Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Walterman.